Everyone, it's November 2016, and I want to thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. You're listening to episode 22 of Postmodern Realities, and I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by Kevin Scutt. Kevin is professor of media and communication in the School of the Arts, Media and Culture at Trinity Western University, which is a Christian university in Canada. He teaches about media, culture, and technology from a faith-based perspective. His research area focuses on video games and how they intersect with our culture and faith in a number of different ways. He is also the author of the book of Games and God, A Christian Exploration of Video Games. He has also written on games in history, games in masculinity, games in religion, games in storytelling, and Lego video games. He enjoys playing strategy video games as well as playing adventure video games with his three daughters. Back in 2013, in the volume 36, number 3 issue of the Christian Research Journal, Kevin wrote our cover article called Can God Fit in This Machine? Video Games and Christians. And it's available free online at our website, equip.org. Kevin, it's good to have you on.
It's good to be here.
Well, when we talk about media ecology and faith, it's really a ginormous topic. Earlier in the year, I gave an overview talk on this issue, and in preparing, I realized there's so many nuances to this subject, and then I also realized people get their PhDs in this area of study. And so, as I was studying, I think Christians tend to see media and technology and therefore gaming overall, I would say, with a very negative point of view, or I would say they would fall into two extreme camps. So either that technology and media is morally neutral and it's all good and we should embrace all of it, or it should be avoided because it is negative and bad. And then regarding video games in particular, in your article you wrote for us that, quote, the church needs to give video games a more balanced treatment. So I guess the question with this whole issue is, what does a balanced treatment look like, and specifically, what does that look like for video games as well as technology and media?
Yeah, I start theologically from the point of view that in a world that, you know, was created by a good God but is corrupted by sin, that just about everything that we see is in some way, you know, it has traces of God and goodness in it. It also has at least traces of sin in it as well. And so I don't think that video games are really all that different in that sense, that things can be used for well and they can be used for ill. And so I think that starting from that position, we kind of look at every medium and consider, you know, what can it do well and what does it not do so well, or where are some of the problems there. And if the church wants a model for how to do this, it should just look at how it views books. This is something that we sort of take for granted because, you know, we've had books for hundreds of years at this point, so we're used to them. But the fact is that books are a technology, and they're not something that we've always had, and they do actually have significant cultural impact. And I don't think you're not going to meet too many people who would say, well, if it's in print, it's all good, or if it's in print, it's all bad. It's a mix of things, right? So when we approach video games, we need to understand that there are some incredible creative potential there, that we can do some beautiful things with it, that we can do some fun things with it, and that play is part of what God made us to do as human beings. But at the same time, there are some potential pitfalls, and we do need to pay attention to some of the challenges. And any given talk or discussion about this may focus on the positive or negative, but overall in our lives, I think we need to recognize that both of those possibilities exist.
What would you say to the person who would counter that and say, with books, it's a different way of interacting with that form of media than something that's visual or something that's changing all the time or something that has an aspect, particularly in video games, of virtual reality? That would be different than books. I mean, there's a sense in which when you read a book, let's say Lord of the Rings, you get caught up in it and you imagine yourself in that world. But there's something different if you were to put on, like, you know, a pair of Oculus Rift glasses and enter into that world visually.
sure. They are different. There's no question about that. When you communicate with a book, you're primarily communicating with words. I mean, occasionally you have picture books, but especially once we get to be adult, most of our reading is focused on the words. And linguistic communication is different than image-based communication. But different doesn't necessarily mean worse. It just means different. And so we need to understand what the image can do that words can't, and that words can do that images can't. And then, the way that they sort of emphasize things. And so, when we talk about images, they tend to be a little bit less rational and linear, but they get much more in touch with our emotional side of our being. And we are both rational and emotional creatures, and our art should reflect that. I think one of the biggest unique factors of video games, and this is mostly limited to video games, is the interactive nature of the text. I mean, when you read a book or you watch a television show, nothing you do as a reader or a viewer is actually going to change the text. You can stop it or pause it or something like that, but you're not actually going to go in and change what happens in The Lord of the Rings. Whereas in a video game, what you do is integral to what the actual experience is. And so if you're playing a game, some games actually will give you narrative choices, and you can decide, will I go this way or that way? Will I do this action or that action? Other games don't do that, but even when they don't, there's still usually some kind of virtual environment that you're interacting with. And I'm personally a big fan of C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien, and they talk about how compelling or powerful imaginary worlds can be really creative forces for people to get in touch with reality, a refreshing view on reality, and also to appreciate God as a creator that much more. And I think that video games are particularly powerful at giving imaginary worlds because we can touch them in a sense. We can sort of interact with them. We can do something with them. Whereas with a more traditional imaginary world that you get in a book or a television show or a movie, you can watch, but you can't touch. And so it doesn't have the same kind of permanence or strength in our minds. So that's just one example. And I feel like yes, they're different. The a book is different than a video game, but that doesn't mean that both of them don't have strengths and weaknesses.
So you mentioned a good aspect of video games is its emotional element. I'm thinking of recently, I guess it was earlier this year, maybe last year, I heard about a video game that's called That Dragon Cancer, which was about a little boy's journey in dealing with his cancer. I think it was like a baby, this couple. And just hearing about it, I mean, I didn't play it or haven't seen it, but I heard an audio article about it. It was really moving. I mean, just hearing different choices in it and just the baby crying, I mean, it was very moving. Besides the emotional element, what other things or aspects of video gaming that you see that are positive?
Well, that's a great example. Let me just take just a few seconds to mention that game and really highly recommend it, because That Dragon Cancer is really an artistically groundbreaking video game. It's one that does a number of things that video games haven't particularly done well. And the makers of the game are Christian, and they put their faith into the game in a very explicit way, and not in a sort of they weren't preaching. They're telling their story, and faith is integral to their story and who they are. So because of that, it's a very powerful experience. And the reason that game is so powerful is not because it has a lot of clever gameplay. It's actually very simple to play, and people who don't play games would still be able to play the game. It's mostly just point and click. But because it is interactive, and that's the thing that I just mentioned a few seconds ago, and I think is one of the key strengths of the video game medium, because it's interactive, you go at your own pace, and you choose what you want to look at any particular point in time. And so there's a kind of investment in the game that is substantially different than a kind of investment of just watching a character. You're choosing, and because you're choosing, you end up, I feel like, emotionally, you become very deeply connected. And the story of that family is a very powerful one, and it would have been powerful if it had just been a movie or something like that. But because you're interacting with it. It becomes something that you're very invested in. I also think that if we're just talking about video games as a whole and what makes them good and strong as a medium is just the very act of play. And this is something that is that the church has struggled with for a long time, and this whole aspect of enjoying life and playing and having fun. There are good reasons to be suspicious of pleasure, I guess you could say, because we often abuse that as humans. But it is also clear that God made us to enjoy life, and play is a huge part of that. And play has been part of humanity from the beginning, but it's something that you know, our tradition of taking our call very seriously means that sometimes we don't do a great job of dealing with that as Christians. But play is part of what God made us for, and video games can be excellent tools for play. They're not the only ones, but they can bring us together as groups of people. They can work our minds in really intense and smart ways. And they can be tremendously creative outlets where people can do all kinds of things that you wouldn't expect, or that other people who even made the game would expect. And I just think those things are real blessings, and the medium can do some wonderful things that way.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Kevin Scutt, who back in 2013 wrote a feature article called Can God Fit in This Machine? Video Games and Christians, which is available free online at our website, equip.org. To read more relevant articles like this one, please subscribe to the journal. And some of our upcoming articles include The Ethics of Board Gaming, How to Witness to Cultural Christians, Evaluating the Combining of Animal and Human Stem Cells in Medical Research, and the Quran and Muhammad's Teachings on Jesus. Don't miss any of these articles. A 6-issue subscription is $39.50, and to subscribe online, visit equip.org. I was just talking to Kevin about some of the positive things about video gaming, but I think when most Christians think of video gaming, they think of negative aspects to it. And I know the number one question probably about that is gaming addiction. We'll address that in a few moments, but what about some other aspects that might be negative about video gaming?
Well, I mean, there's any number of things that we could talk about, and there are some the big ones that keep coming up whenever I go around and speak are things like addiction, which we'll talk about in a second, and violence, which we'll talk about a little bit later. I think that the concern with violence often focuses on effects, and this is something that I we'll speak about in a few minutes, I think. But I think in terms of one of the concerns I have about violence in games is something that I call the narrative of purification through destruction. When you look at a lot of video games, the story that's underlying it is one where a game player has a problem, and it's usually some kind of monstrous evil or something along that line, some opposition. And the way that you deal with it as a game player is you destroy your opposition, essentially. So this can be extremely violent and gory, but frequently it's actually quite innocent looking. I mean, you jump on top of the head of a Goomba and he disappears in a cloud of smoke, right? Which is not a particularly disturbing image. But there's something about the narrative underneath that I think sometimes is something that we don't pay really close attention to. But so many games are like that. And there's good reasons for it. From a programming side of things, it's much easier to program a game where either your enemy is there or the enemy is not there. But it does mean that we continually drink in this story that the best way to deal with problems is to eliminate them. And in reality, witnessing and interacting with people, with our neighbors, whether they're Christian or not, is really often about building relationships and building bridges and walking alongside people rather than treating them as enemies to be vanquished. Video games have a much harder time with that kind of cultural interaction.
Should Christians stay away from games that would cause them to make choices that would not be compatible with a Christian worldview? For example, you know, there are games where you play with other people on a team and you're trying to help your team. But then there's more recent games where people are really out there for your own and you're just trying to stomp on others, or you're going to make some moral choice to do something like steal something or some other kind of action. So are those kinds of games, should they be off limits for Christians?
Anything that really causes us to behave in a way that is problematic is something that we have to look at seriously. But what's interesting about that is that I think many games that look scary or have elements in them that seem immoral or something along that line, the actual experience of playing them is actually quite a bit different than maybe what it appears on the outside. For example, there are a lot of combat games where you run around and you shoot at other people. And what it looks like, basically, is you're going around and slaughtering people. And so that's kind of the mentality that many video game critics will bring to looking at something like that. And they'll say, well, that's just patterning a behavior where, you know, it's fine to attack and hurt people. When in reality, it's probably much more akin to playing laser tag or paintball at worst, you know, where the actual interaction between people is relatively harmless, and it's competition, essentially. It's not much different than playing a sporting game. I mean, if you think about football or baseball or anything like that, there's a certain amount of struggle going on, but it's a struggle where the context makes it very clear that this is not an intention to hurt someone. It's all about a healthy contest, and that's my response to the question as a whole, is that context matters an enormous amount when we're looking at video games, because how players go in and how they think about it and how the game is positioned in culture and what the marketing for it is like and things like that matters a great deal, because it can really shape our mentalities when we go into the game. I know a lot of people who play a game like Halo, for example, which is a shooter game. And as far as I'm concerned, for most of these people, it is not a game that really encourages violence. They see it as running around a gym and, you know, doing dodgeball or something like that. It's a very similar kind of activity that way. So I think the short answer is yes, if something is causing us to behave or think in an immoral way, we have to seriously think about, you know, altering that or dropping it. But I think that often games that look that way aren't necessarily acting that way.
Well, I'd like you to talk a little bit more about video game addiction. I think that's the number one question that parents have, whether they're people of faith or otherwise, that they would see their child become addicted to video games, mainly because they can't seem to get their child off of a video game or out of some kind of electronic technology. And then related to that, just kind of some of the research that's done, we had done an article on pornography and the male brain and kind of just the images rewiring your brain. Same thing with video games, some of the research that's out there. Could you speak to that about rewiring of brains, children's brains and so forth? And then as a follow-up, is there an age which kids shouldn't be playing electronic games? In other words, it seems to me that toddlers and other younger kids are really getting adept at video games or iPads or so forth. Is there an age, you know, where it would be better to introduce a child to video game?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a really important topic, and we could probably just spend a half an hour just talking about this. So I'll try to do it as quickly as possible, and I apologize if I'm oversimplifying. But there is such a thing as problem gaming. There's no question about that. I've seen it in myself to a limited degree, but I've seen it with lots and lots of families. And I'm a university professor, and I've seen problems with my own students, and my wife is a middle school teacher, and I hear stories there too. And I have lots of other friends and family members who talk about this. I'm quite convinced that there is such a thing as problem gaming, where people just play too much and it takes them away from things that they should be doing. If it's kids, their homework. If it's adults, it's their family or their job or something like that. That having been said, Addiction in games is a really, really complicated issue. Researchers haven't really settled on a clinical definition of gaming addiction simply because it's hard to figure out whether games themselves are the cause of problem gaming or if it's just a coping mechanism for other problems. Often, people use games as sort of an outlet for dealing with problems that they have elsewhere in their life. And so it's not necessarily the game that's at fault. And so if you want to fix the problem, you have to look elsewhere. So there is that, but there is lots of indication that games themselves have, you know, addictive hooks in them, things that would make, you know, even fairly well-adjusted people play, or encourage people to play in an unhealthy way too much. I think the key in all situations, whether we're talking about young children or whether we're talking about adults, is that we have to set limits for ourselves, set limits for those that we're responsible for, and then enforce them. And if we find that we literally cannot do that, then that's the time that we start thinking about, okay, maybe we need to remove ourselves from this altogether. In answer to your question about young children, my personal feeling is that young children can play, you know, apps on tablets and stuff like that. I mean, we have to pay attention to the appropriateness of the content. I certainly don't want a, you know, 7 or 8 year old playing Grand Theft Auto or something like that. But there are lots of great healthy apps for kids that you can get on a touch screen, and our children were playing them when they were quite young. The key there was not so much that they were playing, but that they weren't playing too much. And that to me is the key. I'm a media scholar, and I want my kids growing up being at least a little bit literate in most of the major media that our culture is encountering. But I also want them to have a strong foundation in reading, especially because I think that literacy is a strong bedrock for working in any other medium. And so we just put limits on it. We just say to our kids, okay, you can only play so many minutes per day, and on the weekends more. And then we try to enforce that. And I personally believe that that's okay. I think with young children especially, you want to keep it fairly limited. But I don't think that we need to feel bad about letting our kids tap around on some little alphabet app or something like that when they're really young, like, you know, 2 or 3 or something like that.
Well, I would like to, I agree with you, we probably could do a follow-up podcast to this. There's probably a lot of questions that people have, but I would like to also ask you from a Christian point of view about a lot of the video games with demonic, what I would call demonic elements or artwork. I mean, there's some, you know, of course, you know, in Lord of the Rings, there's the orcs, and those have been imagined by Peter Jackson, the movie, to be quite frightening. But there's a lot of images that are similar to that, or, you know, you're going through a dungeon and there's some kind of demons that are coming at you. How about Christians playing those kinds of games? Should those be avoided too? Could they have suddenly some fascination over fascination with some of these evil and quote unquote demonic elements?
Yeah, this is actually something that I personally wrestled with a fair amount because I do play a lot of fantasy-themed games, and, you know, evil characters feature prominently in those, whether they are, you know, demons or some other evil force. And that's something that I've worked through quite a bit personally. And I have to say that, you know, I don't have some authoritative word to give to people on this, but I know that if you're the kind of person that believes that you shouldn't even read stories or watch films with demonic elements in them, then I doubt there's anything I can say that's going to really change your mind on this. My personal feeling is that it's very similar to watching or reading a story with demonic elements in it. I think that when we are called in some way to be sympathetic or, you know, agree with those demonic elements, that's where things get a little bit troubling. But the fact that there are evil forces that a person is struggling against, that's an old narrative pattern, and that's something that is not necessarily unhealthy because it reflects the reality of what we experience in this world. We are faced with challenging evil, and stories are one way with which we wrestle with those things. So I think that it has an awful lot, again, to do with context. How are you approaching it, and what are you thinking about when you're doing this? If this is a kind of celebration of evil. This is your outlet for, you know, being antisocial. I'm not so comfortable with that. But if it is, you know, part of a narrative universe that you're in, and it's one where we're sort of wrestling with evil and trying to figure out what it is and make sense of it, then I think that's a different sort of category.
What about how, I was thinking about this recently, about just how women are portrayed in a lot of, like, media, or I would say geek culture, and that would include video games. And I feel like sometimes the images of women are highly sexualized, or they just seem very gratuitous or somehow objectifying, especially in the way the characters are drawn and so forth. How would you address that, since I know you've written more specifically on gaming and masculinity, but I think this is an issue that is in kind of geek culture, gaming in general.
Yeah, well, gaming and masculinity is deeply tied in with the representation of women in games. And it's important to understand that, and I probably should have said this at the outset, but video games are such a large area of culture now that it really depends on what you're looking at, right? There are some games that are completely abstract. There's not really a whole lot of gender dynamics going on in something like Tetris, right? Or maybe there are gender dynamics, but it's not in the text itself. It's in the culture surrounding it, or something along that line. And so we do need to keep that in mind, that the video game world is tremendously diverse, and you can stay away from, you know, offensive games of any sort, including gender, you know, problematic gender things. But within traditional video gaming, the sort of hardcore, what we call sort of hardcore gaming culture, where based primarily on, you know, sort of young male gamers, you know, between, you know, 15 and 35 or 40 kind of culture, the representation of women can be very problematic, and it can be problematic in a number of different ways. You mentioned, of course, the highly sexualized imagery, which of course plays into the same kind of patterns and problems that we identify with porn. There's also just the kind of roles that women are given in narrative games, especially. And it is true that, first of all, there just aren't a lot of women in video games of a narrative nature. It's also extremely rare for those women to be the main protagonist, and this gives this sort of impression, combined with the sexual imagery, that you know, men are the actors and women are just passive trophies to be won or abused, and this can be significantly problematic. What I think is worth noting, though, is that even in the hardcore space, we're starting to see a shift in representation and a greater degree of maturity with representation of women. For a long time, for example, the Tomb Raider series has had this Lara Croft creature who, she has traditionally been quite popular because they're exciting games and adventure and everything, but she's also like a overinflated swimsuit model, essentially. And to the degree that her proportions are actually physically impossible, they would actually hire models to go to game conventions and stuff and play her, and they couldn't actually literally find women to play the role of Lara Croft because she's physically impossible to meet. But in the most recent versions of Tomb Raider, they've totally redesigned the character and the feel of the game, and there's other things to criticize the games for, but in terms of the representation of a young woman who's an action hero, it's actually, like, the character looks quite a bit different, and the storylines are quite interesting and much more nuanced than earlier representations. So I that's just one example. I think we could say that we're seeing some interesting shifts even in the hardcore gaming world, and there's hope that the representation of women will become at the very least more diverse, and you'll have more opportunities to see healthier representations of gender.
There's probably not that many women proportional to the amount of young men that are video gamers, that's for sure. I'm sure there are some out there. Well, I would love to ask you about violence in video games, but we're going to have you back to ask you about that. But I want to finally ask you, what about those Christians who would respond and say, I guess it would be the same Christians who would respond and say movies or television or other types of things, social media, are worldly and they don't have an eternal focus and therefore should not be engaged with by a believer?
You know, the short answer to anyone who comes to me with that kind of comment or question is to play that Dragon Cancer, which is as holy and as powerful a text as you're going to find out there, whether it be book, movie, or video game. It's emotionally powerful. It has a kind of integrity. It's artistically quite beautiful. And I look at something like that and I go, okay, so whatever critiques we have of the medium to this point, it may not actually be about the medium. It may be what we're doing with it. The actual video game medium has untapped potential that we're just beginning to develop, and as a culture, and that really makes sense because commercial video games have only been around since the mid 70s, and they really didn't gain the kind of technical capacity to do some really powerful stuff until I would say the 1990s in many ways. So it's still a new medium, and we're still sort of figuring it out in the same way that it took us a few decades to figure out what to do with film in order to make powerful, compelling stories there, too. And you'll see, you know, early examples in film, and you'll see early examples in video games where that potential shows up a little bit. But I think the artistic climate surrounding games right now shows us what is suggesting more and more what's possible with this medium. And there are just some really interesting experiments, both in terms of story and gameplay and graphics and everything else. And I think that God has given us this capacity to do something beautiful and interesting and fun with this tool. And I think we're just starting to really develop that. And I'm really excited for what we're going to see over the next couple decades as the video game medium matures.
Well, we'll have to have you back on because we didn't even touch the multiplayer video games that are online and those communities and so forth, as well as the violence. So we'll have to touch on that a different time. But finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Kevin. So Kevin, since you live in Canada, I need to ask you, poutine or a hot chicken sandwich?
Poutine, definitely. Gravy.
And what is the video game you're playing right now that you're enjoying?
Wow. Well, I'm usually playing multiple games. I've been playing League of Legends and Hearthstone a lot over the last few months, but I am really, really excited about Civilization VI, and I have some jobs to get finished, but I'm hoping they're done by this weekend, and next week I'm going to pick it up and play it for a long time.
I just heard about that actually on a board gaming podcast that it was coming out, and in fact, they made a new board game based on in the League of Legends universe that was very difficult to get. Everybody wanted to get that one. What is the first job you ever had?
Oh, my goodness. Delivering newspapers, actually. I started that when I was in seventh grade, actually, and did it for like 15 years after that. It was a good way to get up in the morning early and get a little bit of work and get a little bit of cash. And yeah, I enjoyed that quite a bit. I also ended up coming back from newspapers and then sitting down with my breakfast cereal and opening up the newspaper and reading it. So I've become a lifelong news reader thanks to the Edmonton Journal.
Well, I know in Canada, Thanksgiving is in October, but since I'm here in the U.S. and it's November and looking towards Thanksgiving in a few weeks, I want to ask you, what are a couple of things you're very thankful for besides your family and your faith?
Oh, man, I am thankful for being at a wonderful university that is serious about its faith and is got a great community of scholars and a great community of students. I love living where I am, where I can see the mountains when the clouds are gone that it doesn't freeze over the winter. A lot of people think that Canada is all cold, but here on the West Coast, we actually rarely go below freezing, and it's nice to be able to enjoy beautiful weather, you know, all winter long, and green fields and mountains in the background. So I just really am grateful for Trinity Western University, which is just a wonderful place to work and a great place to live out God's mission for me in my life.
Well, thanks, Kevin, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thanks for having me. It was great to be here.
Kevin has written a feature article back in 2013 called Can God Fit in This Machine? Video Games and Christians. It's available free online at our website, equip.org. To read more thought-provoking articles like this one, please subscribe to the journal. A six-issue subscription is $39.50. And to subscribe online, please go to our website, equip.org. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 1-888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure you go to equip.org, where you can download our free smartphone app, on which you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live, listen to previous broadcasts, make a donation, and subscribe to the Christian Research Journal. So until our next author conversation, thank you for listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast.